Hello. Welcome to another episode of MLB Talk. My name is Andrew. Today I'm joined by Chase and Brent. I hope all of you had a fantastic week since our last episode. Of course, you are listening to us on UCLARadio.com. And if you want to call in and talk to us about anything, you can call us at 310-794-9348. That's 310-794-9348.
So would A-Rod have hit over 600 home runs if he didn't do PEDs?
Chase, you go first. Resident Yankee fan.
I'm going to be honest. I didn't hear the question. We got some bad static over here.
You want to just come over here? Just come over here. All right. Thanks for bearing with us, everybody. We really appreciate it. And as a quick note, if you would like to see the quality of our broadcast improved, please donate to our pledge drive. You can go check it out on Indiegogo. I'll be posting that link across social media, as will the other people on this show. So, yeah, you know, help us get new equipment so we can give you the best show possible. You know, we really love doing this for you guys, and it's made much easier when we can communicate with each other through everything. And a quick reminder, we have actually a new feature here at UCLA Radio. On our Facebook page, you can now listen live and participate in our chat room. So please, you know, go over to the UCLA Radio page, click listen live, enter the chat room, and send us questions, because I think that is a really great way for all of us to interact, and we will definitely integrate that into the show if that's something that you guys are interested in doing. So anyways, back to baseball. A-Rod, 661. Chase, do you feel that this is a number that could have been achieved by a purely human, non-artificial Alex Rodriguez?
I think it's tough to say at this point, just because the allegations have been going on for so long. At this point, the Yankees are in first place, and I'd like to think that it's not tainted in any way. But unfortunately, you never know what's going on with A-Rod. I think something to look forward to on the horizon is right after he hit 661, it was brought to my attention that he's only 38 hits away from 3,000. Which, for those of you who don't know, you know, I don't even know. It's 500 home runs. It's still a big milestone, but I feel like with steroids and everything, it's kind of died down a little bit. But 3,000 hits is the hitting milestone. It's the equivalent to 300 wins for pitchers. And when he gets to this, can the Yankees, for the second time in a row now, go, hey, we're just going to not acknowledge that this happened? And then along those lines, I also read on the MLB merchandise website, they were selling Mother's Day jerseys. And the one that was far and away the one that was getting bid on the most for the most money, Alex Rodriguez. So I don't know how much more the Yankees can say, oh, well, this guy's not marketable, and that's why we're not paying him.
I think 3,000 hits is almost definitely not in his contract. So I think in that sense, it might be more of a challenge, but I imagine they're probably going to stay the course and not make a big deal out of it. They're going to go, hey, 3,000 hits, how awesome. I think that would definitely, in my eyes, be extremely hypocritical. And so I don't expect them to do that. Do you guys see a firefight coming in the near or distant future concerning A-Rod's disputed $6 million bonus?
There's no doubt about it. They signed him to that contract, and he deserves that money, even though he did PEDs. You can't deny someone the money that they earned in their contract.
You know, I think I agree with that, you know, in a very strict legal sense. But I think maybe from a more moral perspective, maybe there's a part of A-Rod now that's like, you know, things are okay. I don't want to mess up a good thing. And the Yankees want to do this. I'm making enough money anyways, enough for probably all of the Houston Astros together. So let's just call it even and move on.
It comes down to the old Al Davis ad. It's just win, baby. As long as the Yankees keep it up, I don't see a problem. The chemistry's good. The team's rolling, more or less. And I just think that as long as they keep winning, they're not going to have any problems. It's when we start losing a little bit and finger-pointing starts that A-Rod's going to be like, well, you know, you could point your finger at me, but at the end of the day, you owe me $6 million, which I rightfully deserve based on my contract.
Yeah, I think, well, we'll have to see what goes on from here. The Yankees are doing great, of course. And with that, I want to move into something new. We're trying just to get a wider sense of the league. I think sometimes we tend to focus on what we like the most. And while that's great for us, it makes me happy and it makes the rest of us happy. I definitely want to touch on some of the teams that I think get glossed over a little bit. So first and foremost, Carlos Rodon finally got his first start. did pretty good. I think it was 6 innings, 7 strikeouts, a couple runs, a couple walks. And it looks like it's earned him another start Friday. Is this the time for the White Sox to just go full on Rodon, or is he someone who maybe needs to go back to the minors for some seasoning?
I think he's deserving to start. I think that team needs him to boost them. They fell too far behind to begin the year off. In a pitching rotation of Chris Sale, Jose Quintana, and Carlos Rodon is at least a pretty solid rotation. They could make a charge for one of the wild cards in the AL.
Yeah, one thing I'll add to what Brent said is Jeff Samardzija is also in that rotation. And while he hasn't been that sharp of late, had another rough start yesterday, I still trust Jeff Samardzija just because he has somewhat of a track record. And I just think John Danks, since he's gotten surgery multiple times, hasn't been the same. I could tell you as a Yankee fan, Hector Nwosi is just not a big league starter. So I think they could definitely keep Rodon in the rotation, and I think they have a precedent for it in Chris Sale, where, you know, it's another lefty fastball slider, big lefty who came up young, started in the pen, and then transitioned to the rotation and has been there since. And I just think if he had a win against the Reds, who are one of the better lineups in baseball, if you're doing that, you have nothing left to prove in the minors, and you're just kind of wasting away in the bullpen, I feel like.
I think it's an interesting situation where maybe he needs a little more control help. I think that... Sorry about that right there. Had a little audio blip. Anyways, I think, you know, it's one of those situations where maybe he could be a little bit more of a refined product, but I think because of the nature of his pitching style, so many sliders, I think he's the type of guy you need to slide in there now before maybe his arm explodes. I hate to say that, but, you know, those sliders are nasty, and they can't be good for your elbow. Nah, it's never too soon these days. It is never too soon these days. So... moving on, last night, Marlins-Dodgers, Steve Cishek blows second consecutive save, and Scott Van Slyke sends the Dodgers to victory. Thoughts on that game?
I just find it funny that the Dodgers still have an overcrowded outfield. I mean, Scott Van Slyke would probably be a starter on most teams. He hits the game-winning home run, but there's still nowhere for him to play.
I think he's actually a pretty good fit for the Giants. In terms of trade partners, but of course it's not going to happen. So I think, you know, you look at some of the other teams around the league, he's maybe not really what you need. So I don't see him being moved. It seems like Alex Guerrero might be the guy on the way out anyways, just because he's playing well enough. His contract's kind of funky. It could work. We'll see. It seems like they need some bullpen help anyways, or starting pitching, but that's hard to come by.
Yeah. My two things with that game though, but think, in March, when me and you were talking about Guerrero and how it was this untradeable contract, he sort of hit his way into where he's a very viable trade guy. And I also think with Florida, you know, I heard talks today about Rafael Soriano and his shirt pulling out, maybe making their way down to Florida. I think at this point, is Soriano the way to go? Maybe not, but they definitely need to change it up because this is two games in a row, just horrible blown saves out of Chizziak, so...
Yeah, Cishek was a really great pitcher last year. I mean, more of a sidearmer. Kind of reminds me of Chad Bradford in a way. I mean, way less extreme, but still. I think it's time to move on from him. A.J. Ramos is the clear in-house solution. Strikeout, it was 21 in 17 innings, and I think a whip under one. So he's a guy who's kind of wild, but he's got great stuff, real closer stuff, and I'd like to see him come into there, if not just for my fantasy team, in which I have a share of the A.J. Ramos train. Moving on, Cubs-Mets, Chris christens the new Wrigley Bleachers with his first home run, and Jacob deGrom doesn't really pitch up to snuff with 5 innings and 4 earned runs. Thoughts on that game?
I think the biggest thing is that we need to pay attention to John Lester actually turning it around. He started off the year terribly with the Cubs. He had an ERA over 5. But since then, he's picked it up. He's won 2 games, ERA under 2. I think it was a solid acquisition by the Cubs, but they definitely needed him to pick it up.
Yeah, my couple biggest things coming out of that game. One, Anthony Rizzo is just continuously being underlooked throughout baseball. I mean, him and Brian went back-to-back in the first inning, which as a Cubs fan, you got to be stoked. But Rizzo's hitting .327. His on-base is .442. I don't feel like doing the math right now, but I could see here his OPS is well over 1,000.
Bomb.
And I think there's a lot of optimism there. Even Addison Russell, he's only at .250, but when you consider .250 after that horrible start, a lot of room for optimism there. And then even in today's game, I know all my Met fan friends, Jacob Cochin is listening, huge Mets fan. Noah Syndergaard's coming up today. This is a guy who, going into the year, was the number 19 prospect in all of baseball. Some have even said at this point, the best pitching prospect, period. And Dylan G's kind of an average pitcher. Maybe I'm being a little generous.
That's very nice of you.
Maybe being a little generous. I think today Syndergaard's here to stay, especially when all you hear about is how in the AAA Vegas League, pitchers just go to fry. This guy so far this year was 3-0, 1.82 ERA, threw a shutout. That screams big league ready. You're not going to do better than pitching well in the Vegas League.
Any projected lines for Syndergaard tonight? I'll give you guys one. 6 innings, 3 runs, 7 strikeouts. Not going to do hits and walks. It's too complicated.
Okay. I think that's a pretty solid stat line, but I have a question for you guys. Would you rather have the Cubs' young batters like Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant, or would you rather have the Mets' young pitchers like Matt Harvey, Noah Syndergaard?
I mean, good pitching beats good hitting. That's always been my philosophy. That's always how I've looked at the game, so I'll take pitchers. At the same time, though, I think a young pitcher with a good pedigree and a young hitter with a good pedigree are very different. And if we're looking at it from just that perspective, I'll take the young hitter with a good pedigree because they seem to have a better success rate.
Long term, I'm probably going to take the bats, even though I do agree that pitching beats hitting. I just think pitchers are so unpredictable. You've seen, you know, Alex Cobb just went down with Tommy John surgery, all these guys. But long term, I'm definitely going to take the hitting. Short term this year, I'm going to take the Mets pitching, though. I just think they have the perfect combination of the power arms and Harvey, DeGrom, and Syndergaard now. And then you got Bartolo Colon defying age, defying logic, defying physics, and leading the NL in wins. So this year, I'm taking the Mets rotation. But, I mean, when I'm reading articles comparing the foursome of Chris Bryant, Rizzo, Soler, and Addison Russell to a modern-day murderer's row, while I don't think it's that, there's something to be said that the comparison is even brought up.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even within Addison Russell's line so far, he had a 12-game hit streak, which has been fantastic. And for those of you watching or not watching the Mets-Cubs game, Syndergaard got through the first inning totally clean, unscathed. So that looks good for him. And Chris Bryant, of course, you know, has finally hit home runs, two of them. And I think what's surprising is that they're both pulled. You know, Chris Bryant is a guy who's got power to all fields. And I think as he continues to build on this, we're definitely going to see a lot of opposite field home runs from him. He's there's not enough to say about the guy. You know, early on, he didn't get a home run because pitchers were already afraid of him. That speaks to his pedigree. He's already had a ridiculous amount of walks, and, you know, you could probably expect him to have an OBP around 400, maybe the whole year. It's kind of incredible. So moving on, the Yankees blew up the Rays yesterday, and CC Sabathia finally gets his first win. I think he's 1-5 with a 5.2 ERA. And the Rays suddenly going from a position of, you know, sudden to dark horse to let's look to next year. Thoughts on that?
I wouldn't count the Rays out too much because Smiley will be back hopefully by the end of the year. Out for the year?
I would say he's probably done. I mean, his shoulder is blown up.
All right, well, hopefully Matt Moore is back one of these days. Could happen. I don't know. I just think for them, it was a bit of a surprise, like you said, a dark horse early on. I don't know if I'd look to next year yet just because you never know, especially in the AL East. But maybe they look to make a move or two. And then on the Yankees side, you brought up CC Sabathia. Yes, got the win, which I guess for CC winning a Tropicana Field, that's like seeing a blue moon nowadays. That didn't even make that much sense. But so that was encouraging. For me, it's just the fact that Ellsbury and Gardner atop of the lineup, you know, they're both 2-for-2 today, actually. Got the averages well into the 300s. To me, that's super encouraging just because the A-Rods, the Teixeiras, the McCanns, you just never know when the power is going to come and go.
When healthy, I believe the Rays have the best rotation in baseball. They have Alex Cobb, Matt Moore, Drew Smiley, Chris Archer, and Jake Odorizzi as their 5 starting pitchers. But when half of those guys are hurt, there's not much you can do, and that's why I think the Rays just need to look to next year. That division's too competitive for them to stay in the lead. They're not in the lead, but to stay competitive with the other teams.
Follow-up question to what you just said. Do you think the Rays are better without David Price? And assuming that, you know, the people they got are still, like, the trade-off.
So would they still have lost David Price, or would they?
No, I mean, do you think the Rays are better off with what they got? Smiley, Nick Franklin, and, or I keep calling him Smiley, Franklin and someone else, I think, for David Price.
I think so. I think that they're a team that looks always to the future, tries to always have young, cheap talent. And I really like Drew Smyly. He was doing really well to start the year. He just had an injury that's hard to avoid as a pitcher.
Yeah, I like Smyly for David Price. I don't know if that's going to be too much of a wash. It's just everyone makes a big deal about Nick Franklin. Nick Franklin's not even in the big leagues right now, which I know, yeah, he's young and whatnot, but this was a guy who was supposed to be a top prospect. If you're a top prospect by now, being traded for probably someone that many would consider a top 10 pitcher in baseball, you should at least be able to beat out Logan Forsythe and Estruvo Cabrera.
Hey, to be fair, Logan Forsythe is playing good.
No, he's playing.
Three home runs, nine doubles, man.
He's having a solid start, but if you're supposed to be the guy, it's like Ref Snyder in the Yankees. If he's that good, he should have been able to beat out Stephen Drew. That's my thoughts on it.
That's a great point. I'll give you that. But we'll see what happens with that. I think, you know, the Rays clearly have a talent with or without Andrew Friedman for collecting arms, and I think that's really good for their future. Moving on, the Arizona Diamondbacks and their new ace, Josh Colemanter, get destroyed. Hey, this is just relative. I'm just saying.
What about Archie? I know his face is broken, but
I'm just saying that they've treated him like he is pretty much the leader of the staff. It's pretty bad, but it's true. They got blown up by the Nats, who are finally starting to look like the team that we thought they would be. Any thoughts on the Nationals' sort of recovery / bounce back to being a good team?
I mean, I don't want to go too much into Bryce Harper because we'll talk about him later for Hot Knot, but and I know it's cliche to say, oh, he's finally putting it together when the guy's 22 years old, but Harper is showing there's a reason that him and Mike Trout were, you know, the two saviors of baseball when they came in. I think for the Nationals, also the biggest thing is the pitching was always pretty solid. Scherzer's remained the rock he was in the American League. It's just the contributions from the little guys. Like, you know, Escobar in the past week had 2 5-for-5 games. Zimmerman starting to hit again. Denard Spahn came off the DL. So I think it's just the perfect mix of guys getting hot at the right time and just getting healthy.
And they still don't have Anthony Rendon, who was a star last year.
Well, they might not have Anthony Rendon at all, but yeah, definitely. I think if Rendon does come back, everyone better look out because they're going to be just stacked. I think right now, and he'll also improve their defense, which has definitely been probably the weakest part of their team so far. So it's very optimistic, and I think, you know, Denard Span's importance can't be underrated. I think before him, they really sort of struggled with the top of the order, and he's really solidified that for them. So that was a really good trade for them quite a while back. All right, and last but not least from our notable news of yesterday, Ubaldo and the Orioles down the Blue Jays. Ubaldo now has a 2.41 ERA and is striking out nearly a batter per inning. Are you buying, or is this just a hot stretch from a player who really can't put it together?
It's just a hot stretch. He's a ticking time bomb. He hasn't been the same since he was, I believe, finished in the top three for the NL Cy Young. He's just not the same player he was anymore, and there's no way he keeps it up.
I'm going to say it is a hot streak to some degree, but I think Ubaldo Jimenez is very similar to the San Francisco Giants in that he'll have his really good years. Like his last year in Cleveland that got him this Baltimore contract, he was good. He had a great second half, sort of carried them to that wild card game, had a really crappy last year, and now he's, you know, sort of back on track this year. So I think, yeah, he's not going to pitch this well this whole season, but I think he's not going to be as poor as he was last year. He's also a prime regression candidate when you know, factor in fielding independent pitching versus his actual ERA.
Yeah, I think, you know, 3.5 ERA for the rest of the year is maybe even a little optimistic for him. One of the interesting things I heard, batters are only swinging at 50% of his strikes, meaning that batters go up there and they're expecting him to throw balls. And that's going to start changing as he continues to maybe have an improved strike rate, and he's going to get hit around when there's more contact. So things will definitely get worse. You can't nibble the corners forever, not if you're Ubaldo. And on the Blue Jays side of things, well, they just haven't really put it together yet. They're not bad. They're one game under 500. But the pitching has clearly been a weak spot for them, having already shifted through a couple of closers. And I think the offense hasn't been dominating day in and day out like they need to be.
Yeah, I agree. Me and my buddy, Temp Nation, we were talking at lunch today actually about, you know, this was a team that still to some degree lives and dies with the power and the long ball. Bautista hasn't been hitting, and Encarnacion hasn't really been hitting. And there are guys who have picked it up. Devin Travis is probably right now the leading rookie of the year candidate, in my opinion. Russell Martin, after an absolutely horrific start, casually has 7 home runs and is hitting around 300 now. So there have been guys to pick up the slack, but at the end of the day, when you have 2 all-star perennial 40-homer guys anchoring your lineup, they need to not necessarily be 40-homer guys, but Russell Martin can't be leading your team in home runs with Devin Travis.
Yeah, I think, well, I wouldn't say Bautista has been super cold. His average has been low, but we've seen that kind of happen with him because he's a kind of extreme fly ball guy sometimes. It's hard to tell what will happen with Bautista. I think Encarnacion still is at least picking up RBIs. I think they're just really great at that. And so we'll see. They definitely need to pick it up. I think Russell Martin is going to prove to be a really big acquisition for them. And, of course, on the other side of the ball, Steve Pierce at second base. Anybody? Okay. How terrible is that? He's pretty close to gaining fantasy eligibility at second base. He's playing there again today. Has, I think, I want to say 4 or 5 games already under his belt. Big problem for the Orioles with Jonathan Schoop, whose name you think would be pronounced Shoop, but it's Schoop, on the DL with, I think, a fairly serious injury. So definitely desperate for the Orioles. But, you know, if Steve Pierce can turn around, it might work. I don't know. It just makes me think of, there was one game in 2013, Giants-Mets, and I think in the 11th inning, the Giants put in Aubrey Huff at second base, which is terrible to begin with. Ball hit to the shortstop. It's a double play ball. Aubrey Huff breaks the wrong way. So the shortstop throws it to second base. No one's there. Game over. Mets win.
I'll one-up you with that. I remember this is just as bad, if not worse, than in his last season when he wasn't even deemed good enough to catch for the Yankees. Jorge Posada was thrown in at second at the end of a game.
Oh, I do remember that. That's crazy. Just nuts. So do you think this is a bad sign for the Orioles or just, you know, a slightly bad position that they just kind of need a stopgap and they don't have anything else?
Depending on how serious Schoop and Ryan Flaherty's also on the DL for the Orioles.
That's right.
How bad their injuries are, this could be absolutely terrible for them if he's there for more than a week or two. Because he is not very good defensively, but he does at least bring a decent bat into the lineup when they need it.
Yeah, we'll see. He's only hitting 178 right now, but definitely... Yeah, right as I'm saying this, it's like, what are they doing? Why don't they just call someone up from AAA? Might as well. And before we head into the break, let's do our hot not players of the week. I'll go first. I'll take my hot player, Torrey Hunter of the Twins, going just ham. That's all I'm going to say, just ham. And in response to whether he's going to retire after this year, he still has to see if he's got anything left in the tank. Sure, it looks like he has something left in the tank. And the Twins are quietly putting up a pretty good season so far. How long is it going to last, you guys? June, July, August? Give me something.
It depends how soon they're bringing up Buxton from AA.
Not this year. Do you think if they did that and they also promoted Sano that they would have a chance?
Probably not, just because the Central has the Royals and
Tigers.
And the Indians eventually have to play better, and I don't think the White Sox are this bad.
You know, I think it's interesting that you say the Indians have to play better. I don't know that their defense is so terrible. You know, there's some issues with their pitching, but I think those are mainly temporary. But the defense is so terrible. I'm not confident in them. And, Brent, your thoughts on the Twins?
When Phil Hughes is your best pitcher, you're not going to make the playoffs.
I concur with that.
Well said. I've got no retort for that. All right. Hot players?
This is going to be really cliche, but my hot players were both named MLB Player of the Week for pitching and hitting. So the first one is Michael Pineda. He was 2-0 last week, 15 innings, 1 run, 1 walk. Sunday, I want to say, was the start.
For Pineda?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I think it was Sunday.
16 strikeouts in 7 innings, just was absolutely dealing. And it's really encouraging as a Yankee fan because who knows when Tanaka's coming back, but I think we found an ace while Montero's eating ice cream in AAA, so that's encouraging.
I have one thing to say about this.
Well, as the kids would say, Michael Pineda is on fleek right now.
Okay. Well, I had something to say about it, but it's not playing. I have this vine from the Yes Network, where Michael Kay said that Michael Pineda is on fleek right now. Sure, you guys are very familiar with that, but there's no better way to put it. That was a truly dominating performance. I want to say, isn't this strikeout-to-walk ratio like 50-something to 3?
54-3, and I think
unbelievable.
It's going to be him and Bartolo in the battle for best walk-to-strikeout ratio ever, ironically set by Phil Hughes last year.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to be able to break that. Because that, I mean, what, it was like 13, right?
I think it was 11-something. I could see Bartolo break it. I don't think Pineda will.
I just don't see Bartolo having the strikeouts. But, yeah, Pineda is really turning into something. You know, he had a very bad start to his Yankee career with a DUI and arm injuries. But, you know, if he can stay off the disabled list, he might be everything that the Yankees wanted.
Andrew, my audience says that your Michael Kay reference was fire. They wanted me to tell you that.
Thank you. I'm so sorry that I couldn't get to play. I don't know what's going on. Just some technical difficulties, but I appreciate that.
We'll see if Michael Pineda, though, is smart enough not to put pine tar on his neck again before a game. Yeah.
You know, this whole time during the 16th strikeout, I'm just wondering, like, maybe he found some other way to cheat. Nah, I think, you know, based on the way he pitched in Seattle, where I was pretty convinced that he wasn't cheating, I really think that guy is legit. So, very exciting for the Yankees. And, of course, did you talk about Bryce Harper?
That was going to be my next guy.
So this is
the guy, Bryce Harper, I have picked in fantasy since his rookie year, just hoping that this would be the year, even though he's only 22. And this was the week. 8 runs, 6 home runs in a 3-game span, 13 RBIs, hit .455, and basically just carried my fantasy team for a 16-0 win. This guy's the man. I'm rooting for him for MVP. Go Bryce Harper. I just got his fake jersey from China. We're rooting for you, Bryce.
Yeah, I think the big thing for him has been the walks, the discipline. He has really figured that out, and I think, you know, the more he forces pitchers to play into his wheelhouse, the more he's going to dominate. I mean, you got to love that swing.
I'm also told that your clip did, in fact, play.
Oh, great. All right, well, I'm glad everyone else heard
it. I'm glad we have an audience that can critique as we
fantastic.
Go.
Fantastic. It's
People
really great.
People seem to forget, too, how young Bryce Harper is. He's younger than Chris Bryant, who just got called up, yep. Jock Peterson, who this is his first year, and this is Bryce Harper's third or fourth year?
Fourth
year. I mean, he is just crazy young. He's only going to get better.
Yeah, I think the one thing just to add on the age, Bryce Harper, it's his fourth year, has never faced a pitcher that's younger than he is.
That's right. And it'll probably stay that way for a significant amount of time. And one more interesting fact about Bryce Harper, has already matched his WAR total from last year, which he achieved in 100 games. That's 1.4 WAR. So Bryce Harper really tearing it up. Here's another one. Right now he's got 19.6 walk rate. That's unbelievable. So don't think he's going to keep that up, but anything close to this, and he's going to be a great player. So that's fantastic. All right, Brent, it's your turn.
My hot player is the less known Bryce Harper. His name is Stephen Voy. He is just tearing it up for the A's. He's really carried the team as a whole. He's fifth in OPS right now, and the only four guys ahead of him are Adrian Gonzalez, Nelson Cruz, Paul Goldschmidt, and Bryce Harper. I mean, he's in a group with some superstars, and if he can keep it up, he could be in the MVP conversation as well.
He's a really interesting player. Didn't get called up to the major leagues until about 26 or 27, and, you know, really had a mix of discipline and aggression as he was younger in the minor leagues. But as he's gotten more playing time, become a better catcher, showed that the discipline was for real and the power was for real. And, you know, he may not have a very good peak, may only be 2 or 3 years, but right now he's looking like a real good player. So it's a great pick. Okay, and now it's time for the negative side of our Players of the Week. It's not Player of the Week. I am going to take an entire group of players, and that would be the A's bullpen. Last night they blew another game to the Red Sox. The team is now 1-11 in one-run games, which is absolutely terrible. And by the Fangraphs base runs metric, they are actually underperforming their runs scored and runs allowed by 8 games. That might be 9 after last night. I don't know. But thoughts on the A's. Is it time for them to start moving players? Billy Bean style? Just fire sale?
It's always time to move players if you're the A's. That's my opinion.
I just don't think that they will ever win a World Series with Billy Bean at general manager. He's always fielded good teams, but they haven't done anything in the playoffs. And I think that their roster this year is worse than it was last year, so they don't have anywhere near a shot of winning the World Series?
I think that's tough. I think you can't say something like that based on, you know, the playoffs are not so much about team construction. It's about whoever gets hot for 4 weeks. Giants done it 3 times in 5 years, and that's that, you know? I think unfortunately, you know, they have to find a way to make the playoffs. That's going to be the hard part in their division. But I think maybe this year you might want to look at trying to see what you can get for Kazmir now. And, yeah, the pitching is not looking so good. Jared Parker has a avulsion fracture in his elbow, which is as painful as it sounds. So I think they're a little short on pitching this year, and the bullpen is definitely suffering. So that marks the end of that section. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to grade Rob Manfred so far, talk a little bit about Matt Carpenter, and
I will add one thing since I will not be here.
Go for it.
I know we're going to do Tweet of the Week, and this also segues into your cold team. I'm going with the Colorado Rockies after this weekend.
Okay.
You can't score 5 runs against Clayton Kershaw and blow the game. That's just fact. Can't do that. And to segue into my Tweet of the Week, and I'll leave people with this, Baseball Tonight is tweeting that Troy Tulowitzki will have a breakfast meeting on Thursday with his agent to determine if it's time to ask for a trade. Was that your tweet?
No, it's not. But we have a really juicy trade proposal. Should we just say it?
Just say it now.
I just want to tell you. Too low for Tanaka.
Oh, God.
Isn't that insane?
Oh, God.
This is the only way it would happen, I think. Because the Yankees don't have the players for Too Low.
I'm so okay with that.
And it's right, injured player for injured player. I mean, you know, the big difference is Too Low's healthy right now. But, you know, next year this could be the exact opposite. And I just think it's enough risk-reward for both teams. It gives them what they want and what they need. I think they should do it. I know it's nuts. I know it's totally nuts, but they should do it.
Not to curse on air, but my Rockies fan friend who's listening just texted me, oh, fuck me.
I hope that's good. Rockies fan, love to hear more of your thoughts on the USA Radio chat room. So let us know, and maybe I'll filter some of those comments to be more PG. All right, so that's the first half of our show. We will be back in a couple of minutes. This is UCLA Radio. All right, welcome back to MLB Talk. You are, of course, listening to us on UCLARadio.com or perhaps through our Facebook page, although no one's hit up the chat room, so tisk, tisk. Anyways, if you would like to listen to this show and tell your friends about it or listen to it later again because it was so freaking great, you can listen to it at UCLAMLBTalk.podomatic.com. That's UCLAMLBTalk.podomatic.com. And now that we are back, we are going to start with our Tweet of the Week. All right, Brent, you're first.
My Tweet of the Week comes courtesy of the New York Mets Twitter account. And it says, happy 90th birthday, Yogi Berra, one of the greatest players of all time. But it also says that 4,000 people have pledged to award him the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Do you think he deserves the Presidential Medal of Freedom?
Because he was good at baseball?
No. Well, he did a lot of civil activism. He was in the military.
He's in the war?
Yeah, he was in World War II.
Yeah, that's fine. Give it to him.
Yeah, I think he deserves it.
I was going to say, if he just played baseball, I'd say no. But he was in the war. Good for you, Yogi. Is he still alive?
Yeah, his 90th birthday today.
Okay, I wasn't sure if it was like if he were alive, he'd be 90. Okay. All right, I'll stop talking about Yogi Berra. May he live forever. Okay. My tweet is from at Bill Plunkett OCR. So I'm going to imagine that's Bill Plunkett from the Orange County Register. Check out those deductive skills right there. Starts with hashtag Dodgers. I should have just not said that, but Zach Greinke on his personal 10-game win streak, of all the ones we've talked about, that's probably the most worthless. I just love that. It's classic Greinke presser. I just love the way he talks to people in interviews because it's just mean. He's not a very nice person all the time, but also I just love his attitude about this. I mean, it's true. It's not about if he wins or not. It's about the team winning, and even though he just said that in such a derisive way, it just cracked me up. There were a lot of good tweets this week, to be honest.
As long as Greinke's winning games for the Dodgers, I could care less what he does.
Yeah, and I actually wanted to lead this into something. Do you think that Greinke is actually the Dodgers' ace? And I say this not because he has a better ceiling than Kershaw, but because he's more consistent.
I would say no. I think Kershaw is just the most dominant pitcher in baseball. Greinke on any other team would be their ace. I almost want to say that the Dodgers have two aces. I think it's hard to slight Greinke because of how good Kershaw is. They're really 1A and 1B to me. If someone told me that they consider Greinke the ace, I could see it.
Yeah, for me, the big thing is just, you know, he's so much more consistent. I think Kershaw has bouts of hittableness. I think Greinke just doesn't really walk anybody, and then also is typically just has such good command. So for me, he's really the guy that you come in every week and you're like, all right, this is going to be good. Whereas I think sometimes for Kershaw, like, the park can play into effect. I feel like we saw that happen in Colorado recently and then in Milwaukee the week before that. But, you know, I guess on the other hand, Greinke is not really the heart and soul of the team at all.
And Kershaw started last year pretty rough. He eventually went on the disabled list, and then he went and won the MVP. He is easily the best pitcher right now, and I expect him to pick it up. I don't think he'll win MVP again, but I could see him winning Cy Young this year.
Yeah, right now he's allowing 20% of his fly balls to go for home runs. That's a ludicrous rate. His career rate is 7%, so that'll go down. And then also only leaving 66% of runners on base, that's really low. So expect that to come back up. And yeah, I guess you're right. Fine. That changed my mind. Sorry, Dodgers fans. Kershaw's the guy. Okay, so next thing I wanted to talk about is Matt Carpenter of the Cardinals, who over this past weekend had to avoid a series with Pittsburgh because of extreme fatigue. And this is a really interesting thing, something that isn't really talked about. But, you know, there's 162 games in the schedule over the span of, I want to say, 183 days. And it comes out to about, I think, 3 rest days a month, which is an extremely strenuous workload. Do you feel that maybe the schedule is a little too intense? You could cut a couple games from the schedule? It's been a somewhat talked about topic recently.
I do think they could cut a few games from the schedule. Baseball season's long. It's a marathon. But at the end, it depends on who gets hot during the playoffs. And I'd be interested to see how ratings go along the whole season, because I do think that they could make the season 10 games shorter, 12 games shorter.
Yeah, the number they float is 8. I like 8. I guess I could also see 16 if it has to be a multiple of 8. You know, it's like, if that doesn't matter, then whatever. But I think that this might be sort of an early sign that things are a little too intense, because you can't go and be like, hey, coach, I need a day off because I'm tired. That's not going to work. But, you know, there are plenty of players who play injured. We see pitchers do it all the time. I mean, classic example, Jose Fernandez threw an inning after his elbow blew up. That's just terrible, just because he wanted to help the team. And so I think maybe this is something that can be changed in future player agreements, I guess, with the owners. But I think, yeah, I love having 162 games. I wouldn't want it to change, but I think for the sake of maybe the quality of play, you could do that or do something where mandated rest. I don't know. Do you think that's maybe too far?
I think that's too far to be able to tell a player they have to sit. It just comes down to players, what they want to do. I mean, you'll get some guys like Cal Ripken Jr. who can play over 2,000 straight games. But then you get some guys who you really have to have that periodic rest. So I just think a shorter season would be the best way to implement that.
I just wonder for a guy like Andrew McCutchen, who it seems to be pretty clear that he's injured, that his left knee is not really at full strength, that, you know, he needs to take some time off, but he can't really, because, you know, it puts his team at a major disadvantage not to have him, even though he'd be a lot better if he was healthy. So It's an interesting situation, and we will stay close to that. Now it's time for Grade the Commissioner. Dun, 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 dun. I want to get more sounds in here.
We should.
I don't. If someone knows, will make sounds for me, like for free or maybe for a minimal fee, please contact me. I'm very interested in having some sounds for the show. It'd be really great, because I know everyone loves my voice made sounds, but it would just be a lot better if we had some actual music in here. So Rob Manfred has now had 5 months as commissioner? 4? I don't know. I can't remember. But he's already made some very big changes, and I think it's about time that we evaluate what he's accomplished so far as commissioner, considering that over the past couple weeks he's actually visited every single city, Major League Baseball city, and talked to all the players rostered on each team to build a rapport with them. So, do you like Rob Manfred? Was C-League better? Or are things just okay?
I think he's been fantastic. I have no complaints about anything he's done during his tenure. I think the biggest thing with him, and will be a big issue in baseball in the upcoming weeks and probably years, is chewing tobacco. Tony Gwynn's birthday was a few days ago. He's tragically passed away last year due to, I believe it was jaw or mouth cancer. And I think he's going to make big strides in that. I definitely think that chewing tobacco is plaguing the league right now. And if they're able to make it so that players can't drink or do anything like that while they're playing baseball, I definitely think that they can get rid of chewing tobacco. It's just a matter of time.
And it'll be very interesting to see how San Francisco's ban of any sort of chewing tobacco in the stadium will affect things. Of course, the Giants already have to deal with that. Now, I know a couple of years ago, actually, Bruce Bochy was hypnotized to reduce his chewing tobacco consumption. So, and I know some other teams have used that kind of thing. So I think it's a very positive development. It's something that'll be difficult because it's been ingrained in the game for so long. But, I mean, they don't really even do it in the minor leagues anymore, right? I'm pretty sure it's banned.
It's one of those things where, I don't want to say hazing, but you do it to fit in almost. With baseball, it toughens the guys up. You'll get veterans who spit their chewing tobacco on a rookie shoe. It's just stuff like that. I think that it's not going to stop if baseball doesn't intervene. And I think that the best course of action that they can do to get rid of it is just to say, in 15 years from now, there will be no one who can use chewing tobacco. So that everyone in the league who's already addicted to it now can finish up their careers, and then you'll get the new wave of next players who won't be allowed to use chewing tobacco.
Yeah, I think that's a great plan. It's also kind of interesting how, you know, it really plays into the sport as entertainment, because I think it doesn't really have an effect on the fan experience to a degree, really. I can't really think of any instance where it's been a positive or negative thing, but I think it's definitely something where MLB is trying to set an example, and I suppose it's a fine way of doing it. And I think you look at other things Manfred's done, he's been pretty smart. I think he's been, you know, willing to use a lot of the data that baseball has to provide, and I think that's allowed him to make some really good decisions. Pace of play, you know, it hasn't been a mind-blowing change, but the fast games now are really fast. I mean, they're like 2 hours, 20 minutes, and I think that's great. You know, I think something specifically needs to be done about the Yankees-Red Sox rivalry. There's something weird about that I think is wrong, because those games add up to a lot, because that's 16 a year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think those games, they take like 3.5 hours on average. That needs to be figured out, but I really like what he's done with pace of play. I think it was the right thing not to really act on on potentially reversing Pete Rose's ban anytime soon, because it's just a little too soon for him. And I also like that, you know, like we mentioned, he's going around talking to all the players in preparation for the 2016 CBA eventual dispute. So I really like that. I think, you know, we'll have to see where the pitch clock thing goes. And I think his mentioning banning defensive shifts was obviously a little amateurish. So I'll give him about a B+, which I think is great.
I would give him around a B+ or an A-. I think, though, if he enacts a pitching clock, that his grade goes straight down to a D.
Yeah, you hate it?
I think the pitching, there's nothing better than a closer going out there in a close game and pitching to guys. And if you make it so that they only have 30 seconds to throw it, I just think it's terrible.
Well, 30 seconds would work, because there isn't a pitcher who pitches who has a pace higher 30 seconds or above. So that's fine with me. The issue that I have is they're trying to say like 20 seconds. And the truth is pretty much nobody pitches 20 seconds per pitch. So I don't know. I'm kind of iffy on the pitch clock. My big thing is, you know, if it is 30 seconds and everyone's already under the limit, it doesn't really change anything. And then only adds stress, which I think would give hitters an advantage. So
they did.
I kind of agree with you.
Pitch clock in the minors, though, and it sped games up a lot. So it could work. I wouldn't like to see it, though.
Yeah, again, my fear is just that the reason it works is it stresses pitchers out and simplifies their game plan and makes it too easy for the hitters. But I have a suspicion that we'll never know.
A big thing, too, is it'll boost the offense, which will in turn make the games longer.
Right.
So you have to see how those two would coexist together, because it could actually in turn make the games longer if it gave that much of a boost to the offense.
I think the big thing he needs to try to do is work on the loogies, so left-handed one-out guys for people who aren't familiar with that acronym. I think there should definitely be consideration for a rule that says a pitcher has to throw either this many pitches or get out this many guys before he's pulled from a game. And if it was going to be, you know, it has to be more than five pitches and more than one guy, because, you know, we have this issue where a guy comes in for one out, then you pull another, and that adds, not only does that add time, it also makes the game much less exciting because it plays much in favor of the team that's pitching. And so I'd like to see that change. Maybe just say you got to face at least two guys before you get pulled. We've already seen this happen a bunch of times this year with the Giants, where Bochy will put in, you know, Javier Lopez, then Gene Machi, then George Contos, then Sergio Romo. For one inning.
Where would you put the rule, though, with a guy who goes out there and doesn't get an out but gives up, say, three straight home runs? I guess if
that's
fine.
That's it.
So, yeah, I guess and batter limit.
Yeah, I don't like the pitches limit for that reason. So that's why I like the batter limit, because, you know, like anything can happen on one given pitch. So it's just there's a great chart somewhere on FanGraphs where it shows the OPS of players in, like, late-game situations. And, you know, starting from like 1900 to present, it's just a straight downhill decline. I mean, basically, it's just become much, much harder to score in the late innings because there's a lot of handedness advantage given to relievers. So I would just like to see that changed, but I don't think it's a super big issue. So, again, Manfred, pretty good grid.
I agree.
Relative to the other commissioners, outstanding, really. I think Adam Silver's been good, but Roger Goodell is a walking tire fire, and Gary Bettman has just as many failures to list next to his successes. So far, good for Manfred.
What I find funny, though, with Manfred is in the wake of the Deflategate, he just established new rules for carrying baseballs to the games and stuff. There's not much you can do to a baseball like you can a football. I just thought it was funny that they just pretty much did this as almost media response because they need to be prepared in case something happens.
Yeah, you got to be savvy. I think the only place I could see that playing into is Colorado, where they famously had an issue with the humidor in, I want to say it was 2010, maybe it was 2012. But other than that, yeah, it's you know, the only doctoring of baseballs really applies sort of once you're already on the field. So not too big of an issue, but you got to like that they're very media savvy. I think also worthy of mention is the fact that they've now used MLB Advanced Media to create alternative revenues for MLB. They actually work with HBO. And so part of the revenue that's coming in is just from working with other sources of entertainment. I think that's really cool. And I think it just shows that MLB is really on top of the curve in terms of league management. So props to Manfred and his homies, I guess. And with that, I think now is time to end the show a little bit early. Unless, is there anything else you want to throw out there in these last waning minutes of the show?
Carlos Correa moving up to AAA. Big thing. Could be the next Chris Bryant. That's pretty much it.
Thank you. Thank you for reminding me of that. Do you think that he'll get called up within the next month?
Since the Astros have no one at shortstop, I mean, Jonathan Villar is just absolutely terrible. I think he will, but it's one of those things where if the Astros start losing games, it could prompt him to either come up, or they could just decide to leave him until June so that the Super 2 deadline passes. It's just completely up to the general manager and the coaches for the Astros.
Yeah, the Super 2 deadline is definitely the big one. I think, honestly, if they have around 35 wins by the end of this month, I don't know, maybe that's crazy. That is crazy, isn't it? Yeah, it's totally nuts. You want to, if they have 35 wins sooner rather than later, they should go for it. Because right now they've already got 20. I think they it's definitely something where if you've still got a shot to make the playoffs, you have to go for it. You know, who knows what's going to happen at that last year. I think Correa is a great player, and they just really need his help. Like you said, Jonathan Villar, who's most famous for sliding into Jimmy Rollins' butt, and then Marwin Gonzalez, who broke up a Yu Darvish no-hitter. That's all you've got there. So I definitely think they could act on that. And now we have reached the end of the show. Thank you so much for listening. We will be here next week, same time, same channel. This is MLB Talk. You are listening to UCLA Radio, and thank you for swinging by.
Back by the beach. Still gonna bring the heat.